Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Murata.
This is a podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1 Friday mornings, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Boland. And we talk about streaming releases, we talk about cinematic releases, we talk about serious topics and the way that they're dealt with in different ways, from indie cinema to mainstream cinema. But what do we cover later in this episode, Simon?
In the second half of our chat with Pam, we talk about Fancy Dance, a new film, or a sort of new film, on the Apple TV streaming service, starring Lily Gladstone as a woman on the run with her niece in Oklahoma City.
Yes, and it's one that's been out for a month or so now, but that we were keen to take a look at and cover, being fans of Lily Gladstone after great performances in Certain Women and Killers of a Flower Moon. But before that, we look at a cinematic release, a big mainstream movie based on a best-selling book, starring and produced by Blake Lively. We're talking about the film It Ends With Us, and we're going to hear a little bit from the trailer right now. Yours, just tell
me yours. What's your name?
Lily. You?
Ryle.
Every Friday here on Brekkie, we take some time for the cinematic arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes, Simon Murata and Tristan Fidler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Close. That was good enough. That was good enough. Good enough. How are you, Simon?
I'm doing well. How are you, Pam?
I'm going all right, yeah. I feel like it's the sort of like calm before the storm here at RTRFM at the moment. The best storm. Like an exciting storm. Like a storm chaser storm. If we were all storm chasers, we would be chasing the storm that is Radiothon.
That's right. I call it U2's electrical storm.
What?
Anyway. that's right. Very exciting Radiothon kicking off next Friday. We'll be there. At Early Birds.
We'll be at Early Birds.
Oh, yeah.
Movie Squad Live.
It's always fun, isn't it, Tristan? How do you feel about doing Movie Squad Live to an audience?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I think it's a lost art to do movie reviews in front of an audience and,
who are drinking.
Yeah, yeah. And just having
mimosas at 6 in the morning.
Yeah, just having a good time dancing, and then someone comes along to say, oh, what's your favourite films in 2024? But it's a good time, and I'm looking forward to a Radiothon, and I'm loving the graphics and the theme. It feels very like 1960s sci-fi,
yeah.
Drobita Strain, you know.
Sending out a signal.
What's going to come back? And to quote my favorite line from the film, Contact, whatever it is, it ain't local. But it is local because it's community radio. Let me just save that quote.
Get Matthew McConaughey in to re-record that.
Oh, dear. Tristan, how are you? You're traveling well? You're getting across all the things you need to get across? You're feeling okay about life?
Am I feeling okay? It's a big question. But, you know, I feel good about life because there's lots of movies to see and it's an inexhaustible supply. So the watch list ever grows and continues on. But it's always good to make time for films that are new release and that I'm kind of ambivalent about seeing. But
is that the case with our first movie this
Yeah,
morning?
Well, we'll get into it. But I'm interested to talk about it. It's been a good week.
It has been a good week, and I think you set up that segue, and then you climbed out of it.
I know. I'm very, very.
Pam's always trying to throw us off, and we just keep redirecting her back. Like, yeah, but at least we got great movies to talk about.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, outside of the movies, what's going? You know, okay, but I want to stay inside the movies. We stay with the new releases.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's also just like a defense mechanism because you say like, how is life? And that's such a big question. And
yeah.
Then I just like with anyone, it's to go to entertainment to find the. I don't know.
The distraction.
That's it. The distraction of the escape.
Okay, was our first movie a good distraction or a bad distraction?
It's an interesting question and one that we'll get into. But yeah, the film I'm talking about is It Ends With Us, which is a new romantic drama. And you know, I use that kind of with a caveat there. But it's starring and produced by Blake Lively, and it's an adaptation of a best-selling 2016 novel by Colleen Hoover. Now, this is an author that I'm not familiar with. You are reacting, which is interesting. But this was, you know, like we talked about in earlier weeks with Deadpool and Wolverine, when you're in the audience and there's, like, lots of laughter about kind of things that you're not across or the references that you might not get. Similarly, I remember earlier being at a screening with a trailer showed, and the audience kind of, like, there was just such a ripple of reaction of, like, oh, my God, I can't believe this movie is coming out. So this, you know, this book is huge. It's a bestseller, and Colleen Hoover is a best-selling author that I'm only getting across now. But, I mean, Simon, I'm assuming you don't know too much about the Colleen Hoover phenomenon?
No, as I said to you earlier in the week, when we're discussing what films to discuss, I said, what is this? I literally only knew the title and the fact that Blake Lively stars in it. And I'm still completely oblivious to the phenomenon, I guess. And I'm presuming there is one, but I'm not on BookTok. I don't know. You know, yes. And I'm not trying to be dismissive. I literally just have not had this enter my algorithm in any sense.
It really has entered my algorithm, and I have avoided it. I haven't read this book, so I can't pretend to know or have an opinion about the actual writing. But the conversation that I've been sort of witness to around it feels very, it's very divided. It feels very, almost poisonous. Fueled with hatred. There's a lot of people that really seem to like Colleen Hoover and seem to make a lot of space and time on their own platforms for talking about how much they don't like her. The sort of headline of the dislike seems to be that she encourages the romanticization of toxic relationships. That seems to be the headline. And I'm trying to say that without spoiling anything from, you know, the movie, but it seems to be that across a lot of her books, she doesn't paint the healthiest picture of her relationship. Now, obviously, you can argue that you don't need to paint it in a fiction novel. It can be a depiction of something bad. But I think that's the conversation, from what I understand, seems to center around that. I kind of eye roll at these movies a little bit just because, or at these books rather, a little bit, because they do seem to be sort of caught up in that book talk whirlwind. So I'm a little hesitant because I've been disappointed before when I've been wrapped up in a book talk storm. But
talk is like, it's a subset of TikTok where it's all about books and authors.
Thanks for debunking that for us.
Well, it's
it's good. People don't know, and I went too far in.
Well, but I mean, because Hoover has an interesting story in that she is from Texas. She self-published her first book, which was a young adult novel called Slammed, and that was successful, but it also got big on the back of a blog review of a very successful book blogger. And this book, It Ends With Us, which came out in 2016, was a success, but then grew even more so because of book talk or the discussions around it or, you know, the support. So, you know, it's a bestseller, and that means it's going to lead to a film. And you mentioned spoilers, but I feel like this is alluded to in the trailer, and I feel like kind of spoiling it in terms of the discussion because it's out there. But this is a romantic drama, but it's also kind of like dealing with a serious theme. It's dealing with domestic violence. And Hoover has said that this has been inspired by her own kind of background or observing her parents. And so I just wanted to give a warning to that, to the film's themes, and to, you know, that also to anyone listening, help is available, and that there's the number 1-800-RESPECT for a helpline number for information, counselling and support service. And there's a simile in the film, kind of in the closing credits, there's also like a website given for, you know, for support and so forth. But that aspect is something that I don't know if that's clear in the marketing or, but, you know, obviously there's a lot of readers of the book who will know this, and that's part of like the toxic relationship in this movie. Blake Lively stars. She stars as a character named Lily Bloom, and her dream is to open her own flower shop in Boston.
Of course.
And they do reference in the film how that name is quite that's quite something to be called Lily Bloom in a film. And there's a lot of character names that are kind of a little bit maybe on the nose, because she...
They sound like almost fan fiction adjacent names, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, she meets... At the start of the film, she goes back home to be there for her father's funeral. She's dealing with that. She comes back to Boston and she meets a neurosurgeon named Ryle Kincaid, who is...
Sorry. How do you spell Ryle?
R-Y-L-E. So,
it's like Kyle with an R.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So he is played by Justin Baldoni, who is an actor I did not really know much about. But he is from...
He's in Jane the Virgin.
Right.
He's like one of the love interests in that. And that's kind of what I know him from. And I kind of just know him as being this like... slightly annoying-faced, symmetrically-faced hunk. Like, he just, like, has Ken energy, you know?
He's a hunk in that, yeah, he's
I can't
ripped.
Believe you didn't say Ken energy, but like...
Ken
like
energy.
After all this time.
Ken energy, but yeah, Ken you. Energy, you know?
So, yeah, yeah, he's quite...
Some people don't know Simon.
He's quite ripped and physically, you know, impressive, but he is also the director of this film, and his production company, Wayfarer Studios, produced this film. So... The two characters, they meet on a rooftop, they connect, they have their an attraction, but they don't kind of consummate. It's only when Lily starts to open her flower shop, she gets assistance from a friend, well, someone who she just meets, who is Alyssa, played by Jenny Slate, the comedian and writer.
Love Jenny Slate.
She, you know, is the comic relief in this film, and the audience that I was with, they were laughing at a lot of her lines. But she winds up working for Lily in her flower shop, and she is the sister to Ryle Kincaid. So they meet again. The attraction develops into a relationship. And then throughout the film, we also get flashbacks to when Lily was a teenager, witnessing the domestic abuse of that her father perpetrated against her mother, but also her first love, when she became romantically involved with a homeless kid named Atlas Corrigan.
Atlas.
Yes, Atlas Corrigan, who's homeless because he ran away from his home because, you know, he was also... from a violent upbringing. So this theme is quite prevalent throughout the whole film. So back and forth, we go through time to the present day, and what do you know? Lily and Ryle, they're together, they go to a restaurant, and then Lily recognizes that the chef is Atlas, now played by Brandon Skilina. And so she's caught between her old love, her new love. And while that's happening, things start to go sour in her relationship with Ryle, including, yeah, him kind of impulsively lashing out. And so this is what the kind of film deals with, is just kind of her navigating this, I guess, this love triangle, but also, you know, what she's experiencing and moving forward, which all kind of leads up to the title, It Ends With Us. So this, I mean, now that you know a little bit more about the story, Simon, I know that you haven't seen this, I mean... What do you think? Would you go see this film? What is this kind of...
Oh, look, I mean, if the characters weren't called Lily Bloom and Ryle Kincaid and Atlas Corrigan, yeah. Was it? You could describe that premise, and that sounds like it could be the meat to actually a very interesting and
absolutely.
Thoughtful and provocative drama. I probably have less faith...
Yeah.
In it, and I say that without having seen the film. I mean, I did spot a headline for a film for a review saying not even Blake Lively can save. And I said, wow, not even the thespian Blake Lively. Like, I don't have much faith in her as an actor either. And I say that as someone who watched every episode of Gossip Girl.
Thank you.
Serena Vanderwoodson is not necessarily up to the task from my perspective for this kind of drama. So that's, I mean, but you tell me if that's, you know, not the case, but I feel like the premise itself could be meaty and worthwhile and interesting, but I don't have much hope for this adaptation.
Mm. Yeah, and I understand that. And look, I did like this film in a sense that I liked it as a glossy melodrama. Like, it's like there's lots of montages of Boston, lots of kind of languid, emotional pop music. And I was, you know, I liked the performances. I did like Blake Lively in this and the other two actors. And I was moved at certain points. But this does, like, in the trailer and in the film, they use a Taylor Swift song, like Ricochet.
Mm.
And this feels like a movie version of a Taylor Swift song in the sense that there's kind of like, it's kind of, it's appealing to a sense of raw emotion, but it's also a little bit of a fairy tale in a way. Mm. So there's a caveat where I'm a little bit like, I liked watching it as a kind of glossy melodrama. I'm a little unsure about how it's dealing with this kind of serious topic, and whether, you know, what is the best way to deal with this topic? Mm-hmm. You know, a documentary, a gritty indie drama, just actual financial support for these services, which are always needed. So, yeah, I was in two minds about it as well. And I'll be interested to see with the success of the book how this film does. I think it will, you know, benefit from a decent opening. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what maybe some experts in the field kind of think of the film's messaging, and particularly with the director being one of the stars and playing the character who is the abuser. It's I just wanted to bring that up because also, like, you know, maybe some people are just thinking it's going to be a romantic drama, not knowing that there's this aspect to the film. So, I think it could potentially be very triggering. Mm. So yeah, it's out in cinemas now. You know, I do like Blake Lively. I was a fan of The Shallows, the shark movie she was in. I do have a soft spot, weirdly, for The Age of Adeline. Maybe it's just to hear...
I also have a soft spot for that movie.
Maybe it's just to hear Harrison Ford say Adeline.
I know, it's Harrison Ford in that movie that really does it for me. But I feel a similar way about this. I haven't seen it, but I'm hesitant to go. It's a tricky topic to handle, and I think that it's important that stories like this make their way into the mainstream, and there's examples of these stories playing out, and to normalise that and to feel like you're representing people's experiences.
Yes.
So if someone goes to see that movie and they can find the courage to understand their situation a little bit more, that's great. But I don't know if I'm trusting these particular people to deliver that kind of understanding with the nuance and with the tact it really deserves. So that's where, that footing and that sort of execution I'm definitely concerned about. And based on what you're saying, Tristan, it doesn't necessarily feel like they've given it the lack of romanticism that it deserves and the sort of serious treatment. And it doesn't have to be a gritty indie or some sort of overly serious, you know, still film that's beautiful and heartbreaking. You can have a mainstream flick that deals with this in great ways, but I just don't know if this is that movie, and I'm hesitant to recommend it to people in that capacity. If you do need help, if this is a story that's, you know, brought up anything for you, or you're a victim of domestic or gender-based violence, there's counselling information and support available via 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732, or you can text 0458-737-732. We're going to come back with more movie reviews in just a tick.
Power is not just about dancing. It's a way to be together. My mom, she won't miss it, will she?
Your mom ever missed a powwow? She'll be there. This is Jack's Gridiron again. I'm calling about my sister's case.
What a dolly!
No, I did speak to the sheriffs.
What a dolly!
No, they said the res is federal jurisdiction. Dad.
He ain't been at any of the searches.
I didn't come all the way out here to fight.
Why did you come?
We've been talking movies, but we're talking horror shows right now because there's a horror show you can catch next weekend. Simon, tell me about it.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking, Pam. This week, Tristan and I brought to you two dramas. You're like, hey, where's the horror?
That's not what I'm thinking, but you brought it to me anyway.
Exactly. So you can find it next weekend. We wanted to shout out the Perth Horror Film Festival is playing August 15 to 18 at the back lot. Always a really fun way to catch some, you know, fringe horror features, some locally made horror features, and some shorts as well. So, yeah, if you are trying to get your fix, if you weren't satisfied by Long Legs, you go to look up Perth Horror Fans, a film, and Perth Horror Festival, and see what's going on next weekend.
Oh, gorgeous.
But that's it for horror.
Right, is that it this week?
That's it for horror.
So you're telling
week.
Me this next movie we're going to talk about is not a horror flick.
It's not a horror flick.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's
what
right.
What a treat for me. Two dramas in one sitting?
And then you get the reprieve of Radiothon for the next 2 weeks, and then we'll just have to make a point to bring only horror films through
no,
to the end
thank
of the year.
You. No.
We almost did, but anyway, we'll talk about that at a different time. We're talking about Fancy Dance. This is the next film that Tristan and I are going to review, and it's been one that's sort of been on the hopper for us for the last couple of weeks.
What do you mean on the hopper? What does that mean?
Well, each week, you know, Tristan and I are kind of going like, well, what should we cover? And this is a film that we wanted to watch and discuss. It actually came out in late June, not in cinemas in Australia, and only got a very nominal theatrical release in the US a couple months ago, but is an Apple TV Plus original feature. And we've wanted to discuss it. Hasn't really been much room, given some of the films that have come out that we've given prominence to. But this is a movie starring Lily Gladstone, who people will have come to know from their Oscar-nominated turn in Killers of the Flower Moon, and is also in a number of other features, including Certain Women, the Kelly Reichardt film. But this movie, Fancy Dance, was filmed a couple of years ago and made news in the wake of Killers of the Flower Moon and Lily Gladstone's nomination because it didn't have a distributor attached. It's a film largely made by and produced by Native American people, and it's about life on the reservation in Oklahoma. Didn't have a distributor, even though Lily Gladstone was, on the rise. Now Apple TV Plus also distributed Killers of the Flower Moon, and so they've picked this up as well.
Okay.
So it's a film that you can go and stream, but we want to talk about it because interesting and rare to have this kind of story and told from these perspectives, but also great to have a Lily Gladstone leading performance. I mean, Tristan, how do you feel about Lily Gladstone as a performer?
Yeah, I think she's great. I think they're great, particularly after seeing Certain Women many years ago and hoping that they would kind of be in more films, and then to have such a great big role and a lot of the kind of great reviews around Killers of the Flower Moon was about their performance and wanting to have more of them in the film, that the story could have been told more from their perspective. And I remember watching some of during that kind of whole awards march of all the different kind of ceremonies and acceptance speeches, Lily Gladstone receiving an award and talking at length about the great experience that they had making this film, and that and like kind of just almost like asking for distribution at the podium while receiving this award. So it's great that it's been acquired by Apple, and even though this does mean it, I feel like with any streaming releases, they do get kind of like lost in the shuffle unless they have huge stars. But I'm more interested in a film like this being acquired by a streaming service than the millions spent and wasted on something like Ghosted with Chris Evans and Ana de Armas, which I don't know if anyone even recalls or remembers or talks about.
What about Wolfs, the upcoming Brad Pitt, George Clooney?
Well, you can't go past that star power, but and it's already been greenlit for a sequel, apparently, so looking forward to that. But, so I was very keen to check out Fancy Dance.
And Pam, are you familiar with Lily Gladstone? Have you seen Killers of the Flower Moon?
I haven't. It's honestly been on my list for so long, and I know that it's just a bit of a mega watch, so I haven't had the brain space to do it, and that's a terrifying excuse. I really would like to watch it, and I've heard only really great things about it. So they've been on my radar for such a long time, and they've been present in my brain since we've spoken about that. But I did hear of this movie, and it did come across via a recommendation from a reviewer that I follow online, like on Instagram, and I was like, oh, okay. So I've added it to a to be watched list, but I don't know that much about this flick other than the recommendations.
Well, I'll give you the rundown, and here's the best part of it, perhaps, is that Killers of the Flower Moon, it's a masterpiece, but it's 3.5 hours long. Fancy Dance, 90 minutes.
Nice.
90 minutes. And Lily Gladstone plays Jax, who is living on the Seneca Cayuga Reservation, which is basically land that is governed by the Native American tribe and community, and reports not to the state, but to, the federal government, effectively. And so Jax, a bit of a petty criminal, something of a mother figure to her niece, Roki, who has played really well, teenager Isabel DeRoy Olsen, and has had to do that more so over the last fortnight, at the commencement of the film, because her sister, Tawi, has disappeared, effectively. So Roki's mother's disappeared, and Jax is her primary carer now. Child Protective Services come in, and because of Jax's criminal history, Roki's removed and placed with her white grandparents, played by the fantastic That Guy, Shea Whigham, and Audrey Wasilewski. And so Jax, who has promised to take Roki to a powwow in Oklahoma City, a big sort of celebration, lots of dances and recognition of Native American culture and spirit, she spirits her away in the night, and they go effectively on the run. But unfortunately, though Tawi's disappearance hasn't been able to rouse the local authorities into action, this form of kidnapping does. And so it's a bit of a race between Jackson Roeke and the feds to get to this so-called fancy dance. Now, that probably, that is the premise of the film, but maybe the way I'm packaging it makes it sound more like a like a, an action film or certainly a thriller. And to be honest with you, the film, which is written and directed by Erica Tremblay, is kind of uneasy wearing the sort of outfit of a thriller. You know, there are these moments when we learn a little bit more about the circumstances of Tawi's disappearance or, you know, the cops are on Jax and Roeke's tail, that the film is maybe a little less convincing. But it's when we're really homing in on the family drama and the relationships, even between the grandparents as well, who are complex figures in their own right. The film really sings, and it builds to what I thought was a very emotional climax, and I think, Tristan, you felt the same way.
Yes, I like this film. The performances are really good, and it is like an indie film in that, yeah, it's kind of dealing with a serious topic in terms of the kind of the disappearances or the kind of the murders of Indigenous women or dealing with that kind of that crisis, which is not, you know, which affects a lot of kind of communities who are in that situation. But yeah, I really like the performances. And yeah, the ending when it happens, I was quite moved by. I was quite taken aback by how moved I had become or attached to the characters as they sort of came to this point. And it is a little bit of a road movie. And then, yeah, as Simon was kind of talking about, there are moments where it feels like it's kind of like a like the alternative angle to something that you would see in a procedural like True Detective, where, you know, people get interviewed in strip clubs and the, you know, one missing person is just another kind of link to, you know, catching the killer. This is not about that. This is about, you know, the family members who are dealing with what's kind of left in their wake. So, yeah, I quite like this film.
Yeah, and Pam, I think a good comparison is a movie like Winter's Bone, which people may have seen. It was Jennifer Lawrence's breakout film about basically, you know, this teenage gumshoe in the Ozark trying to find her missing father.
Sure.
That's sort of the thriller version that works of this story. But I think this feels very authentic and is a really convincing and affecting drama. So Fancy Dance, it ain't got no massive marketing budget. There's no, you know, massive premieres like It Ends With Us. But you can go and watch it right now on Apple TV Plus.
Do you think it opens a window into a conversation or an understanding about Native American culture and practices and community understandings in a way that's sort of, you know, interesting and novel for the viewer or for the attendee if you don't know that much about it already?
I think so. I mean, not to the extent of a TV show like Reservation Dogs, which people may have seen. You know, I think it is, I'm not going to say it's an authentic, but by all accounts, it is an authentic view of Rez life. But it does, I think, because it does have to spend some of that time in on the run. Mm. You don't get to live in it as much as I actually would have liked to. I wouldn't have minded if it had actually pulled back from that thriller element. But it is telling an important story about murdered and missing women in these communities. Heavy stuff, but really well handled in this case.
Absolutely. I think this is a movie that I really want to go catch. Now, if you want to go catch it too, of course, you can go see it on Apple Plus, or you can, you know, find out a little bit more about it. Maybe there'll be screening sometime. Who knows? I don't know. Have a little look. Find out for yourself. If you want to catch up with the Movie Squad podcast, you can do so wherever you get your podcasts. There's always extra bits and bobs to get across. But for now, that's it with the Blockbuster Babes. We'll catch up with you next week live at Early Bird.
So there you have another edition of the Radio Chatter of Movie Squad, and talking about two movies handling topics in different ways, and also highlighting two actors. It's interesting to hear that for you, Simon, Blake Lively, her movie career is not quite up to the task. I do look. She's not my high on my list of favorite actors, but I do have a soft spot for The Shallows and, for some reason, The Age of Adeline, which is a movie where she, if I can remember correctly, I've only seen it the one time, she gets struck by lightning and in a weird circumstance is ageless and exists through time to the point where she meets her previous lover from the 1950s because she has to hide in secret because she's ageless, she's immortal or something like that, is played by Harrison Ford, who is, I think, the father to her new boy. Anyway, it's another melodrama, but one that for some reason I quite liked. Yeah.
And maybe I'm not being fair because I'm looking at a filmography now for a game I'm going to okay, propose to you. Because I've not seen the grand majority of these.
Sure.
So who knows? She probably has grown quite significantly as an actor, but the last film I saw her in was A Simple Favor, which I don't care for.
You're not excited about the sequel?
No, very much not. I'll even say, I think that's more of a Paul Feig problem, to point to the director, unfortunately. But that does bring us to our game, Tristan. I wanted to know, you know, you're revealing yourself as a Blake Lively super fan, to be honest with you. And we had the RTRFM quiz night a couple of weeks ago now.
Sure.
And you wrote one of the questions which involved Blake Lively.
Yes.
You were asking who were the four actors in The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants or some variation of that. So I'm gonna give you a handful of character names, and I want to see if you can align the Blake Lively character with the film.
Sure.
So Lily Bloom, we know, is It Ends With Us. But from which character is the Blake Lively... from which film is the Blake Lively character Ophelia Sage?
That...
O is her nickname in that film.
Oh. I guess it's something to do. Is it Shakespeare related? Ophelia Sage. See, this is really testing me because I'm trying to think of...
not the most memorable names, you'll see.
No, I'm trying to think of any other Blake Lively film. I'm just going to... It's the first one I'm going to think of. It's not The Town.
No, it's Savages.
See, that's great because that's a film... I've not seen. I've always kind of been curious about it because it's an Olive Stone directed neo-noir that is quite overripe, is from what I hear, in terms of some of the language and the anyway. So
what
that's a great
way to put it.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you three more. What about Carol Ferris?
Carol Ferris. Gosh. What is one other Blake Lively?
I'll give you a hint.
Is it Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants too?
No, that's Bridget Vreeland, of course.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. She met her husband on this film.
Oh, the green... No, it's not that formal. Green Lantern. Green Lantern.
They dropped the for that one.
Yeah.
All right, what about this? Chris Coughlin.
I mean, is that The Town?
That's The Town. Of course it is. And last but not least, young Pippa Lee.
Oh, gosh. That's, I can't think of it, but that sounds curious. Like that was like her early in her career playing the younger version of an older actor.
Yep. That was The Private Lives of Pippa Lee.
of course, one of my favorites.
So, I was hoping for more memorable names like Lily Bloom. Of course, there's Lady Poole, Stephanie Patrick from The Rhythmception, Emily Nelson from A Simple Favor. In my head, that was such a more striking name or character name.
You know, I completely forgot that film existed. And I did review that, The Rhythm Section, where she, it's kind of her version of the sort of the spy thriller.
Yeah.
And I quite liked her in that. There's a couple of good moments in that, even though it is, as evidence, completely forgettable.
I think it holds a record for like the worst ever opening or something like that. And it was beset by a bunch of problems. Like she broke her hand while filming it. And it was directed by someone of note who, here we go. Who can Google it fastest? It was like a director of like TV that had like stepped up. Look at us. I'm on the internet. Tristan's on his phone.
And what
Reed Morano. There you go. It is directed by Reed Morano, who won the Emmy and DGA award for directing the pilot of The Handmaid's Tale.
Gosh, I was trying to think as well who was like, you know, because in these type of films they have like, it's like sometimes all you need is just like three actors and that's all you need.
Yep.
So I was trying to think, who was like the villain or who was the kind of, I think it's the handler was Jude Law. I could not remember Jude Law in that film, which is an indictment on the film. But it was also produced by Barbara Broccoli. So, you know, the hand of Bond was upon this one, but unfortunately not to the success of any of the Daniel Craig movies. But
do you remember Sterling K. Brown's performance as Mark Serra, a former CIA officer who now makes a living as a private intelligence broker?
You know, I would give it up for Sterling K. Brown. Sometimes in interviews, he's extra a lot, but he is very memorable in the fact that I feel like he gave one of the best performances in a very forgettable movie that I watched a couple of weekends ago, the Netflix film Atlas. You know, speaking of Atlas, there's a film called Atlas starring Jennifer Lopez in a mech suit. So he's good in that. The worst Predator movie out of the franchise so far is The Predator, directed by Shane Black, which is quite a shame considering his track record with screenplays and other films. But his performance in it, I think, is just
pretty funny.
Very good. And it's a shame that he is not the main star, rather than, you know, the forgettable, is it Boyd Holbrook? Is it
Boyd
Garrett
Holbrook?
Hudlin? Is it, you know, but
he's the one who makes Sterling K. Brown, just to quickly, he's the one who makes the point in The Predator that actually he's more like a fisherman.
So everybody, look, you know, sometimes a film doesn't necessarily have to be great. It doesn't have to be memorable in total, but there are always a moment or a scene that will stick with you forever, and we celebrate those moments for films that we dare not return to. But thank you so much, Simon. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate that game. I definitely feel like I need to study up on my Blake Lively knowledge for the next quiz, the next challenge. And we'll see you next time. And before to say, yeah, our next episode might not be a podcast because it's Radiothon. So if you're listening to this at the time of release, it's gearing up. It's happening. It's a big part of what we do because it's part of RTRFM, and it's a great way to support the station and to send the signal back. So, yeah, you can subscribe early. You can do a lot of things. Just go on the RTRF website and show your appreciation, particularly if you just like listening to us chatter, aside from all the other great shows, great hosts, great things that the station provides.
Absolutely. Go to rtrfm.com.au, support.rtrfm.com.au, or call 9260 9200. All right, Tristan, we'll talk soon.